Our guest today is David Peterson. David Peterson has a brand new album, David Peterson in 1946, which is his band. The name of the album is Cup of Loneliness. We're going to talk at length about it. There's so many great influences. David chooses to use triple fiddles throughout. You'll find out why. Bill Monroe songs, Hank Williams songs, Hilo Brown, all kinds of great music from that Cup of Loneliness on Necktie from David Peterson in 1946. There, to the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a powerful, powerful version of Prisoner's Song, which is from Dave Peterson in 1946. Dave has a brand new album, Cup of Loneliness, and Dave is my guest right now. I'm so happy to have you back.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. I'm really, really glad to be here. It's been a while since we talked.
It's been too long.
Good to talk with
you. It's been too long. I looked it up, and you're on my Unreal Bluegrass archive, and it was 2015, so that's been more than a handful of years almost.
That's right. That was old time power.
That's right.
Bluegrass gospel record.
Well, that was a powerful. And that was a powerful record. Now you have this new album, Cup of Loneliness, which is, boy, I tell you what, to the listeners, David and I spoke the other day about some of the tunes, and that's when David selected Prisoner Song to open up. I want to talk about that a little bit, but so many of these songs are so solid, and we were talking just a minute ago about there's triple fiddles on things. I want you to make sure that we give credit to the players, but I know this was a long-time project. I think from my notes it says you may have started recording in 2017. You finished it in January 2020, maybe. But boy, it's such a great such a great album. It's a lot of music. 16 cuts on here. That's a lot.
Yeah, we decided to make people get their money's worth on this outing, and it did. It took me 3 years to record it. I did it in 4 sessions, and of course I had to pay for it as I went, and save up to do the next round, you know. But I think it was well worth the wait for me personally. I'm really glad we got to get the people we did on this, and how we recorded it. We did it live, and so I was really happy with that. We did it live in one room with no headphones.
Well, I was going to ask you what that meant to the listeners. I think I know what you mean, that you're in a studio. It's like you're a band that's sitting there recording or playing, as opposed to people mailing in their parts, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Just like we play in any other context,
yeah.
Basically, you know, if we play on stage or if we play any other time, we play all together,
yeah.
And we play off of one another by hearing and feeling, and this is how they used to record, record records, as you well know. People just went in there and did their performances, and they captured it in a controlled environment in the studio, but it was done the same way that they do it any other time they play. So that's kind of how we did it.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing because, like you said, you play off of each other, and you're looking around. You can get a little bit. Somebody can get something from you as they're playing, and if it's good, keep it. You know, just do it that way. But sometimes there's a little bit of emotional detachment. Sometimes you have to do it. Sometimes you have to get a player from too far away, especially over this time when people weren't traveling much. But I'll tell you what, the triple fiddles on this thing are just, boy, they just grab you right away, and then you wind up listening to the whole thing because you're waiting for them to chime in on every song. So you really pulled together some great stuff on this.
I've been thinking about this for a while because, you know, it's been a little bit since I've done a secular bluegrass record, and I wanted to go in both feet first. And I've been thinking about a fiddle section that I would love to use because I wanted to try to do things in the spirit of Bill Monroe's Decca Sessions, which is kind of the high lonesome sound of bluegrass.
Yeah.
And I thought of the people that I would use. I decided to get Stuart Duncan, Aubrey Haney, and Timmy Crouch, which have all played on other records of mine in various contexts, but they've never played all three together. And as far as I know, they've never all three together played on any record of anybody's. So
I've not seen them listed. I like liner notes, and I've never seen those three names. Of course, I hardly ever see triple fiddles on anything.
I just decided to go for it and to make it an event. And of course, there's three different good banjo players on this record as well, and two mandolin players, and most of the people on the record. are either present members or former members of 1946. So Stuart Duncan and Timmy Crouch were not members of the band, but they played with me off and on at different places. But Aubrey Haney, he helped me start the band in 99, and so did Mike Compton. So they're founding members.
Let's go through a little bit. Before I forget, Dave, and you mentioned some of the players on this, I want to make sure I give credit to the people that added this gorgeous sound. So you've mentioned the fiddle players. Let's talk about the banjo and whoever else you have on here. I want to make sure they get mentioned.
Well, the current banjo player in 1946 is Brent Lehmans, who lives in Knoxville, Tennessee. And Brent is a professor, or he has been a professor in a teaching capacity, but I think he's more in administration these days at UT, at the University of Tennessee. He's in the ag department over there. I think he's involved with the running of the program over there. And but he's just an absolute authority on Scruggs-style banjo. And not much evidence of Brent on records, but he's traveled with me, and I can tell you he's just a fantastic banjo player. And this is the first record of mine that he's been on. So he's the current member. Eric Ellis, who has played with me all over North America, he is on this record as well. He's from over in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. He's on the title cut, actually, Cup of Loneliness. He plays some really fine banjo. He's just an authority on scrub style as well, or any style. And then there's Jeremy Stevens, who was a former member of 46 and traveled with me on the road before he did his own band, High Fidelity.
Yeah, and the audience may be more familiar with his work with High Fidelity, which is a great band. And Jeremy's a great banjo player. Yeah, and they've been on a couple times. I just enjoy them so much. The audience may recognize them faster from High Fidelity than from time he spent with 1946. So there's banjo players gone. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I do appreciate what they do.
Yes, sir. And so that's the three on banjo, and then the two mandolin players. As I mentioned, Mike Compton. He's a founding member of the band long ago, and he's on a bunch of my records actually. And I wanted to make sure he was on this one. And of course, he's on Prisoner's Song. So, Mickey Bowles, who has been with me the longest on the road. He's been with me about 20 years. And we traveled all over the United States and Canada, every possible place you can think of, and played a lot of bluegrass music together. And as far as I'm concerned, nobody sings with me or matches my timbre of my voice or blends with me better than he does on tenor. So his mandolin style is just perfect for what I do in the band, and his singing is perfect. And so that's Mickey Bowles. He's on mandolin as well. And then Superman Kent Blanton is on upright bass. And Kent has played on a lot of my records, including Mountaintops of Rome and most all of my bluegrass records he's been on. And he's just a fantastic player. And on a song like Prisoner's Song, he's playing a style on the bass that was invented by Lightning Chance and Ernie Newton back in the 50s. On a lot of Bill Monroe's Decca recordings, you can hear this this brush. It's like sounds like a snare drum or something. And what they do is they hold the snare brush between the fingers of their right hand, and there's a snare pad, I call it, attached to the upper bout of the bass up near where the G string is.
Okay.
And it goes down and follows the contour of the bass. But what they do, they have to play the bass different. They have to play it with their thumb. And they pluck the note with the thumb, but then they catch the backbeat with the brush on that snare head, that brush that they hold in their fingers. And so Kent Blanton is probably the best current day practitioner of that style that I know of. And he actually did learn it from Lightning Chance.
Wow.
He learned it from Lightning personally.
David, we started the program with Prisoner's Song, and now that you're into it, did we leave off any players yet?
Well, there's also another fiddle player on the record that played in one of the contexts of the three fiddles. Stuart wasn't on one session, and so I called another world-class fiddle player, Shad Cobb.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Shad's just a fantastic fiddle player.
Yes, he is.
And, so he was on, Shad's on the title cut, Cup of Loneliness, and he's on a bunch of other number of tunes on the record. And he's on the session that Eric Ellis is playing banjo on. So
this music, David, this music is so right in that good spot. And I told you this before we went on the air that I've been listening several days since we were planning on doing this. And it's all just right solid, not only with the triple fiddles, which is gorgeous and captivating. The banjo, as you mentioned, is nice and solid and clean. It's not overly ornate, but it's so well done that it folds right into the music, so that no one's drawing attention to themselves instrumentally. They're great, and they play great, but they're not trying to go out of their way to say, I'm going to do this run here. This is all really solid band sound with your voice leading the way.
That's the job of a producer, is to make sure you select the right people for the job. And I tried to get to people that would match the style of bluegrass that I was doing. And all of these people, they know how to back up a singer, and they know how to play for what the song needs.
That's right.
You know, it's not so much what they play, it's what they don't play. They play, if the song needed more, they'd do that.
Right.
But they played, I think, what the song needs. Some of it we discussed beforehand. I had some specific ideas of how I wanted to do things, but other ones, not necessarily. Some of it was I knew what I wanted, but I kind of gave them leeway to play what they felt.
David, yeah, sure. If you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, I'm talking to David Peterson of Dave Peterson, 1946, brand new album, Cup of Loneliness. Before we leave, we'll tell you how to find it. But the Prisoner song, the opening cut, which we played, happens to be the first cut on the album. You really put on a nice display vocally. You reach down into that high-low brown bag, and I think you're much stronger than him at doing that. High-low had he was high and he was low. But I think your voice is so strong that you do that. I don't know who else has done it or who I should compare it to, but it's so powerful when you make that switch that Hilo was made famous for. And, man, you don't let up. You're on the gas all the time when you're singing as far as the full voice.
Well, thank you so much. I have a lot of big shoes to try to walk in. And Vernon Dalhart recorded that tune originally, I think, in 1925. And I think it was one of the first million-selling records in U.S. history.
Wow.
It was one of the first ones to do that. And but other people have cut it over the years. And one of those people was Bill Monroe on his Decca recordings. He cut that. And Owen Bradley played piano on that, on Bill Monroe's cut of that. And Bill Monroe did not really do the yodel thing on his, but then Hilo Brown, when he cut it, he got into that falsetto thing.
Yeah.
I just tried to do my own adaptation of, somebody else that had a really good cut on that, I'll say, was Joe Val.
Okay.
Joe Val actually cut that on his Live in Holland record back from like 1981 or 2, right in there. And Danny Paisley was playing rhythm guitar on that. And they went over there and they recorded that. They got one of their shows they did over there and recorded it live, on that tour they did. And so Joe Val was probably the closest one that I was trying to dial into. My version most resembles probably something that he did.
Okay. All of the songs on here, by the way, if people follow, and I would suggest that they do this, and I don't mean following down the street, but certainly following on social media. David Peterson is out all the time playing. I don't know, David, if there's any, you are more dependable than the U.S. mail as far as getting out and playing music somewhere. I mean, it's every day. I see you're starting now. This is what I'm going to play. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to play. And so you're always, first of all, you're really a great student of the music. If you just, people listening all of a sudden realize that you know the depth and the history of bluegrass from way, way back, which is great, and you show it in the songs and the style that you choose. But But really, David, aren't you out there all the time playing somewhere, somehow?
I try to make sure that I'm using what I've been given, and that I'm being a good steward of the gift that I've been entrusted with. And you know, it's not all the time with the band. I do a lot of stuff solo as well, but
right.
I make sure that I keep my feet moving. That's what I tell people. You got to keep your feet moving, and you got to use what you've been given, and if you do that, things are going to work out. You know, I find that I've been taken care of just fine, and hopefully this record right here will get attention back on the band context of what I do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never quit playing bluegrass, but you know, I have other things in my musical palette that I like to do. And sometimes when you make an expression of that on recording, people think you've abandoned something else, and that's not the case. It's just that you want to express another part of what you do musically.
Yeah.
But this one's right in the wheelhouse of what people know me for, and that is bluegrass.
Boy, it really is. It really is. There's so many great. We mentioned at the beginning that there's 16 cuts, only one instrumental, which is that classic Earl Nashville Blues, which is great. It's a great cut of that. You borrow a lot of tunes, several tunes. You do Bill Monroe, you do Hank Williams, you do Everett Lilly. You really sample. And here's what I want to ask you then. When you're selecting songs like this, I know it took you a while to put everything together, but what do you base your choices on? I mean, you have so many great old songs and such a great sound, but what do you choose in these things when you get to the time you're going to cut it?
Well, what happened was, we'll just talk about the general theme of this record. We'll start there.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And what it is the song, the title cut is Cup of Loneliness, and that is a George Jones song, actually, of all things, from his early days on Starday Records when Pappy Daly was producing him. And basically, I would call it a gospel song or a semi-sacred song, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the rest of the record is gospel. It's unusual in that context. But why I picked that was because one day I was in Nashville. I lived there for 25 years. I lived there a long time. And the guy that's the rep for D'Addario Strings, his name is Tom Spaulding. And I was going there to get strings from him at the office in Nashville where he is. And we got to talking about, and he's a big student of music too. He's actually a great guitar player. And he just loves music. He loves country and jazz and all anything real he says he likes. And we got talking about those George Jones sessions and from those days. And Cup of Loneliness came up. And in the conversation, the light went on with me that day. And I said, you know, that would make a really good title for a record, especially a bluegrass record, because basically the theme of this record is loneliness, loss.
Exactly. That's exactly
which
it.
Basically would signify that it is a bluegrass.
That's right. You are correct. You're correct.
And, you know, so I realized I'm going to do a record. I'm going to do this record. And so I started gathering songs that went with that theme. Not every song is exactly with that theme. There's one or two that may be questionable about that, but most every one of them is about that theme. And it was songs, a lot of times when I do a record, there's songs that have stayed in my mind for a long time and that I've intended to do something with, but have not got the opportunity yet. But there's songs, some cases I've been thinking about for 20 or 30 years and finally get around to doing it. One song you mentioned was Old Southern Skies from Everett Lilly.
Yeah,
and the Lilly brothers and Don Stover were very instrumental in bringing bluegrass to the place where I was from, which is New England. I'm from the Boston area long ago.
I can still tell.
as people well know, they exposed a lot of people in the Boston area to the the authentic sounds of bluegrass music. Yeah. Of course, they were from Clear Creek, West Virginia, and the Lilly Brothers and the Confederate Mountaineers, you know, they did some really great records, and one some of their early records were on the Event label out of Westbrook, Maine. And one of those songs Everett Lilly wrote is called Old Southern Skies. And I've just always really liked that song. I don't know why. I feel like it's really authentic hillbilly music. And so I've meant to cut that song for a long time and have been singing it in other contexts. And finally got the opportunity to do that, and was my tip of the hat to the Lilly Brothers, because I probably would not be playing bluegrass today if it wasn't for them, because the people that got me into bluegrass were directly influenced by them. They saw them play at the Hillbilly Ranch and Club 47, a lot of places up there in Boston.
You know? I had David, I'll tell you, I had a star by it. As I make my list and my notes, and we talked about it a little bit before we went on the air, but I had a star by that as one that I'm glad you filled out the explanation for it. I wonder if we can get to another tune for the listeners. I think what we want to go to, and I told you the other day on the phone, your Kentucky Waltz to me is high weeds when you're going into Kentucky Waltz territory. And a lot of people do it, and a lot of people do it okay, but you really, and again, I say this about you, you're very stout vocal. You never lay back. You go where you can go, and if you can do that with Kentucky Waltz, and it's a beautiful version, I want you to talk about that, and then we're going to introduce it and play for the people, and I'll come back and talk to you for a minute.
It's a tune that I do in live shows a lot, in appearances. And, of course, Bill Monroe, it's one of his songs, but it actually started the state waltz craze in about 1940. And all the other ones followed, Tennessee waltz, Alabama waltz, you know, Mississippi waltz, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted to tip my hat to Bill Monroe. There's several Bill Monroe songs on this record.
Oh, yeah,
that's
right.
One of them. And, you know, Memories of You. And
First Whippoorwill.
First Whippoorwill and Traveling This Lonesome Road.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was the song. And it does fit the theme because it's about, you know, longing, you know, for, you know, this guy's forlorn. He met this girl and that's it. That's the end of it, you know, and got to dance with her and then never saw her again, probably. But people don't think about it in that context, but that's the lyrics bear that out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's a. It's an iconic Bill Monroe tune, and, of course, it's fiddle territory. And I wanted to see what their take on it would be, you know. And it happens to be the first song we cut on the record. It was from the first session in 2017. And it was the very first song we recorded on this record, and it's the very first take. We only did two takes of this song, and that's the first take.
No kidding. That's a great lead-in. I want to play now. I'm talking to David Peterson, if you're just tuning in. Dave Peterson, 1946, from the album Cup of Loneliness. David just did a great build-up for, I think, a powerhouse version of Kentucky Waltz, the Bill Monroe tune. We'll play that for the audience, and I'm going to come back and chat with David a little more. So this is Kentucky Waltz from Cup of Loneliness. This is a killer version. Wait till you hear this. Hold on. All right, David, I think that people get it. When they listen to that song, they get what you're about if they didn't know, and they get what this album is about. From Kentucky Waltz Alone, it's got the triple fiddles, it's got all that sound and all that great. The band is so tight, and your vocals really, really, really just bust through cleanly. And when I say this to a singer, you have control over your voice. You go to the notes you're going to. You can go as loud, and you can go as long as you want, and you carry it straight without a lot of wavering. In other words, when you're done with a note, you're done with it. You don't have to slide up to a note, and you don't have to let it go like it's killing you to keep it. You get right on this, and Kentucky Waltz is the perfect one to do it on. The vocals on this with the band is just, I told you the other day we were getting ready for this, it was immediately my favorite.
Oh, thank you so much. That right there, that's that was from the first session, so Jeremy's playing banjo. Mike Compton plays really killer mandolin on that. And Superman Kent Blanton on upright bass. I'm playing guitar. And then Stuart, Aubrey, and Timmy on the fiddle. And Thank you so much. That was a tune that I've always been meaning to do because we do it live, and it's a good show tune. And the solo number, there's a handful of solo vocal numbers on this record, and that's my salute to Bill Monroe and his mastery of creating this music. So.
But you got to be able to do that before you wade into it. Of course, you know that because you've done it, but I'm just saying, I hear, listen, I get all kinds of music to the station, and I love it, and I love people to send me stuff. I listen to all of it. I tell everyone that sent. I listen to everything that I get, and I get a lot of stuff. But when I hear a lot of versions of Kentucky Waltz, not all of them I'll play. I'll play Bill Monroe's, I'll play Don Rigsby, and I'll play yours because for right now, that's what I think are the tip top. I mean, I think those are the top of the chain, the food chain for versions of Kentucky Waltz, and not that everything else on this new Cup of Loneliness isn't just as stout and strong and well put together, but man, I'll tell you what, you just nailed that one. You nailed that one.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's got a part of it's identifying what your strengths are and where your wheelhouse is, and my range is more tenor.
Mm-hmm.
So to try to do, you know, but like anything else, you don't want to do all songs like that and get wore out on that. But it's a good tune to drop in a record to at the right moment, you know, and it's bluegrass, and you know, it could be done a number of ways. It could be done country. Back then, they weren't calling it bluegrass.
Nope,
it was just country music.
It was all country music.
And so, you know, it's specific to Bill Monroe and the bluegrass, you know, the name of the genre. It's about Kentucky, and you know, I just think it's a finely written piece of music, and it's you can do a lot with something that's got that quality to it, and so I just tried to do what it is that I know how to do, and I thank you so much for the kind words.
Yeah, sure. You know, he is aware that Tennessee Waltz followed Kentucky Waltz, talking about Bill Monroe, and he used to, and I've heard him say it, that you know, he thinks you can hear a lot of his Kentucky Waltz and the Tennessee Waltz, which became this monster hit on the country charts.
Yep.
But I get his point.
He was the guy that started that, you know, it's interesting to hear his music evolve, you know, over time. But, you know, he had several phases in his career of how his music went, and that was from his early part of his career, and then some of the other stuff later on, like the Decca recordings, got into a darker, more dissonant type of sound, you know, and more angular type of playing. I've heard people talk about it being angry blues from that time period.
Hmm.
And that's probably a good description for it.
I never thought of it, but that's a great description.
It's interesting. And then later on, he becomes this tunesmith of instrumentals, which he always was. But it got off into it. You know, it's interesting. It's very interesting. But the Kentucky Waltz, I just love. I just think it's a really well written piece of music.
It is, and now you've got it down. Now you've got it in a record. You've got it in this Cup of Loneliness, and it's there. You can do it live, but man, you nailed it on this. You nailed it on this recording. Now you got it.
Now you can say, "Do you like that? You know, well, we happen to have it on a record."
Exactly right. And there's not a thing wrong with that. That's a good thing. Listen, before I forget, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more. We're going to introduce one more song, but make sure that the listeners know how to get their hands on it. Is it a website? Is there a way that they can get Cup of Loneliness?
Yeah, you go to the website 1946band.com, and it'll take you to a band page, and you can send me a message on there if you want to get that record.
Okay.
And it's very easy to do. We'll get you squared away. We'll make sure you get it, and it'll tell you how to pay for it and all that. So.
That's all good. That's all good. We've talked a little bit about some of your influences on this particular album. And we've talked about Bill Monroe and mentioned a couple of the tunes that you do, including the Kentucky Waltz. Hank Williams shows up several times.
Just I could not help but include Hank Williams because actually there's only three people from the country music genre, I believe, that are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One of those people is Jimmy Rogers. Another person is Bill Monroe. And the third person is Hank Williams. They are all in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And for good reason. I think their music, I think the music of those three people specifically influenced like the latter portion of the 20th century of modern Western music, American music, including rock and roll. I know Carl Perkins cites Bill Monroe as an influence on him early on. And I think Bill Monroe was actually the first rockabilly myself. I think he was the first practitioner of rock and roll music. And, another person who sounds like Bill Monroe is Chuck Berry.
Yep. So, and then you think about the list of this for just a second, and we'll put an asterisk by this, and we're going to come back and talk to you some more. But I've always thought, too, that the harmonies, you talk about the influence of Bill Monroe. Started off talking about Hank Williams, but let me just do this because I want someone to tell me that I might be right or I'm wrong, and I'll give it up. I think the harmonies bled over into the Everly Brothers.
No question about it.
You know, and then all of a sudden you got the Beatles. So you make one jump from Bill Monroe to the Everly Brothers, and the Beatles were really trying to be, their harmonies. They were doing Everly Brothers stuff. So you got Bill Monroe through that whole chain on that other side.
That's right. Well, and Bill Monroe was from Western Kentucky, and so were the Everly
That's
Brothers.
That's right.
Ike Everly was from Western Kentucky. Of course, one of the early thumb-style guitar players in the vein of Merle Travis, and he was right up in there with those people as one of the first practitioners of that.
And if you drive down the Bluegrass Parkway heading west, I'm from Kentucky.
Right.
I've been everywhere. If you drive west on Bluegrass Parkway, you'll see Rosine. You can cut up to the Jerusalem Ridge if you want, and you go a little further, you'll wind up, there's a marker somewhere on the side of the road that talks about the Everly Brothers. So I've always felt that, and I didn't invent it, I just always thought, well, there's a connection to the Everly Brothers, who were more famous than people today can believe, so much so that they paved the way for all those nice harmony things that came through rock and roll and the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles were
That's right.
Buddy Holly and the Everly Brothers when they started out.
That's right. Well, and that song, the record they did called "Songs Our Daddy Taught Us," there's a lot of good songs on that, including "Down in the Willow Garden,"
yep,
and "That Silver Haired Daddy of Mine."
That's right. Oh, that's right.
And "Rocking Alone in an Old Rocking Chair." There's a lot of good stuff on that record, and I think they expose a lot of people to their roots, which was hillbilly country music.
I'm with you. I want to get Paul McCartney on the show so I can ask him that. And I can't quite get, I can get, but I can get Dave Peterson, so I'll take that in a heartbeat.
Well, if you called him, he would be on your show, I guarantee you.
Listen, you are such, you have so much information and detail on the songs that you love and you play, and this whole album is full of Bill Monroe tunes, Hank Williams tunes. You've explained why they fit in so well, and gosh, you've mentioned all the players, which are just, there's not a bad note. There's not a bad note played on this. The triple fiddles to me are just, I love it. It's every time it kicks it off, you think, yeah, man, that's the sound. That's the sound that immediately takes you back to the beginning of this kind of music, I think. And I don't know why that is. This could be my particular bent, but that sound to me is like no other.
That sound is iconic to the music of Bill Monroe.
It is.
It's a multiple fiddle sound, the high lonesome sound of bluegrass that he was playing bluegrass when Flat and Scruggs were in the band, but it got off into another thing when he got the multiple fiddles on the Decca recordings in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that was actually Bill Monroe's idea. I think Owen Bradley had something to do with several things that became part of his sound. In the multiple fiddle thing, I think Owen Bradley had something to do with
it. Okay, well, you're probably right.
And I'm thankful that he did. Same thing with the snare head on the bass. I think that was Owen Bradley's idea. And it was a way to get a kind of a drum texture in there without actually having one,
Yeah.
And But, you know, stuff like Wheelhouse, like, that's in there. And without that, like, his recording of that originally, without that being in there, that wouldn't even be near the ceiling that it does. So it has a really cool thing to the music. Yeah. So I've been using that on records for probably 20 years. And Superman is who I get to play that on my record.
I'm going to ask you why it's called Superman, but you can only tell me if it's something I can air.
Well, no, you could. It's in his name. It's Kent, like Clark Kent.
Oh.
So I think that's what people – I think he started calling that in high school.
Okay, good enough.
He's actually from Nashville. He's from Goodsville, you know, just the next town, a couple towns up, you know. So he's from there.
Okay.
And he saw a lot of changes in Nashville, and he's a barber now. He has a barber shop in Goodsville.
Okay.
Continues to play and do what he can. I like to use him on my records. I like his approach to bluegrass. I really, really, really enjoy playing music to feel that we get. And, you know, that's the other thing. We cut this live in one room with no headphones. One of the things I'm proud of about this record is it's the approach to a human performance, you know. I think that's one of the things that makes us love the original bluegrass music was that it's basically no frills situation. It's people playing together, and how it goes down is how it goes down.
And they're working off of each other, which is a statement you've made already. But you're kind of playing. You kind of know where it's going to go once you play with them for a while.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, even people in other genres like Oscar Peterson and stuff like that, people that are known to be masters of 20th century music, you know, arguably the greatest jazz piano player that ever
lived. I don't disagree.
You can put a metronome on them on their recordings, and I don't know that it's going to stay on it. Stay on the metronome. It's going to move because they go forward and they go backward. They play dynamically. The music doesn't just stay in one place, but it's imperceptible because they do it together. Yeah. So it's not like you're hearing a gap in the timing and some mistake. It's just that human beings don't play math. They play by feeling and hearing. They're living souls, you know. So a metronome can only do one thing. It can only play quantized beats. But that's not really how human beings play. And it's not going to sound like a mistake. It's just that they're going to take you on a journey.
Yeah, I'm going to make you jealous for one quick second, Dave. I'm talking to David Peterson here on Unreal Bluegrass. But I saw Oscar Peterson with a solo grand piano, and the gentleman on the other solo grand piano was Herbie Hancock. And they did about five or six cities that year. And it was just the two of them. That was it. Two grand pianos and sitting next to each other. And it was, man, I'm telling you. Blew my mind.
That had to have been one of the all-time
memories. It's one of my top several, you know, all-time great concerts, and I had to go to it. As soon as it was announced, I fought like crazy to get a good seat. I got a good seat. It was outside. It was 95 degrees near the river, I wasn't going to move, man. They were just, it was a blast. Well, so there, when you mentioned his name, there, I thought I would do that. So Go ahead.
They delivered the goods, too, didn't they?
Oh, man, it was mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. Herbie came out and said, I'm going to play a little bit, and then I'm going to introduce Oscar Peterson, who I need to borrow one of his left hands. Before Oscar came out.
I saw some kind of a video footage of Oscar Peterson playing two different time signatures. One playing in one time signature with his left hand and a completely different one with his right hand.
Yeah.
That's a mind-boggling thing. I don't understand it. And he just didn't, there was nothing, you know, I mean, that's the gift that guy had.
It's the way their brain works, goes right to their hands. We'll talk about that another time. You and I, when we get back out and everybody's out and about running around the country, I'll find you. We'll talk about Oscar Peterson. But I want to skip down to the 16th cut, which is an instrumental, the only instrumental on the album, This Cup of Loneliness, Nashville Blues. We talked a little bit about it off the air while you included that one. I want to talk about that, then I want to come back and have you introduce Run Mountain.
Well, I've only recorded two instrumentals in my recording career, and this is the second one. And I thought it would be a very fitting thing to put a period on the melancholy statement of this record. And, you know, I spent 25 years in Nashville and you know, put my time in there, and it was, I played enough music in that time frame to sink a battleship, you know. It's just a lot of music went under the bridge. And I used to be a banjo player. That used to be my main instrument long ago when I started out. And it was a favorite of my banjo days, you know, this tune.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to have Brent Layman's play it, because Brent is just, I really like his approach. He can not only play Scruggs style, he can play any style he wants to, but his first love is Scruggs. And so I wanted to have him play this tune on banjo, and I put it as the last cut as a closing statement to end melancholy theme of the whole thing. And I'm well pleased with how it came out. We did three takes of this back to back in 10 minutes. We just wrote, said, all right, here we go. We came to a day at the end of a day of recording, and this was on the last session.
Okay.
of the four sessions. And so we had done four songs already, and I said, well, let's go for a fifth. And it's like, well, hurry up. We got one of the guys had to go pick his kid up or something like that. And I said, well, let's just do this. And so we discussed it, and, you know, but, you know, it was a long day, and we had time to squeeze one more in. So we went over it and talked it out, and, you know, and then we started rolling tape. And we did three takes, and this was, I think, the third take. And we did it in 10 minutes. So this is, that's how we did that one.
It's a nice ending.
We had to get it done, and we got it done.
Well, and I appreciate you doing that, being a fan of banjo playing myself. Now, let's get...
So you're a banjo picker.
I am. Let's go to Run Mountain. I want you to introduce that one. Then I'm going to say goodbye to you. We'll play Run Mountain for the audience. And I enjoy so much talking about your music, David. But let's skip back up the tracks to Run Mountain. We've hit most of the feel and many of the songs. Let's do Run Mountain, which is a great tune to end our discussion with.
Well, I've always liked this tune. It was, you know, J.E. Maynor and Maynor's Mountaineers. I look at it as a transitional act from old-time mountain music into bluegrass. And they did this. They recorded this tune originally in 1946. And same time Bill Monroe started recording his stuff for Columbia with Latin Scruggs in the band. But this was clearly still in the old-time music kind of vein with two-finger style banjo playing. And but I look at them as kind of a transitional act because they were headed right toward the bluegrass sound, but was still in the old-time camp. But they were J.E. Maynor was he lived in Concord, North Carolina for a long time over near Mount Airy, and his son was J.E. Maynor Jr., who played guitar on the original cut of Run Mountain. And the guy that wrote the liner notes for this record, Jim Beaver, who lives in Mount Airy, let J.E. Maynor Jr. hear our cut of this song before he passed away, and he gave it his seal of approval. I'm proud of that. One of the people that played on the original recordings heard this one and liked it. So I've always just thought, you know, I heard this tune in my head. I said, I wanted those fiddles to play unison on the front end, like an old-time fiddle band would have done it. And like Clayton McMichen or somebody like that might have done it, you know. And I just thought it would, and I was not disappointed. It kept the effect that I wanted. Then they split off into harmony on the second part of the solo. So that's what I had in mind. I did have a specific idea for this one.
I don't doubt it. You've got a specific idea for all of them. The album that we're talking to David Peterson is David Peterson 1946 Cup of Loneliness on Necktie. David's already told you about how you get your hands on it. We've had a nice discussion, David. I'll find you again, and we'll just talk about whatever we want to talk about, music-wise. And you can inform me because you know a whole lot more than I do about it. So
I know better than that.
Let's leave the audience then with From This Cup of Loneliness. Great version of Run Mountain. And I've always enjoyed the tune. I enjoy it now more that you've told me more about it. And so I kind of like, now when I listen to the lyrics, I'm a little more attentive to some things that you told me off the air. So now it kind of makes more sense to me. I mean, it's kind of like the cuckoo, you know, the cuckoo bird song. Nobody knows. I guess somebody knows what that means, but I don't think anybody really does. But now I know what Run Mountain's about because you explained it to me a little bit.
Well, a lot of people say, you'll hear people say different things of what he's saying. They said chuck a little hill or something, but actually he was saying run mountain, check a little hill. They're checking it out, checking to see what they can find there, maybe some beverage.
Some moonshine, yeah.
Some beverage,
Makes perfect sense now. I didn't connect it. I probably was just sort of, it's such an up-tempo tune, but we're going to. All right, man, listen, thanks. Have a good day. Stay safe. Whatever you're doing, get out there and play. I invite people to please follow David, and I don't mean sneakily down the street. Follow him on social media because that wouldn't be good. So follow him on social media and you know, seek him out when he gets out playing. And A Cup of Loneliness is the album we've been talking about. I'm going to say goodbye to you, David. I've enjoyed it, as always. It's been 6 years. I don't know how that happens. It doesn't seem like it, but we'll have to make sure it's not another six.
And, I'm going to make sure, because I'm not going to wait that long to put out a record. I'm going to make sure I stay on it a little better and get another one out sooner. Right. But I want to thank you for having me on your show,
Steve.
I want to thank you for playing my music over the years. Without you, we wouldn't be around. So I want to thank you for that, and thank you for playing Cup of Loneliness.
Yeah, man. All right, here we go. Run Mountain. I'll talk to David later. The audience will hear Run Mountain. Thanks a lot, David. I'll talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Bye.